So I was jealous of the Man United's winning, the Chelsea's winning. My job, I felt, was to make our team into winners, to try and improve our team. Unfortunately, injuries got in the way of that.
Thierry Henry called you the best defender he ever played against and the only one who didn't try to stop him by fouling.
Looking back now, I was probably slightly depressed. I'd play 3 or 4 games and I'd break down with a groin. Come back, 3 or 4 games, hamstring. Come back, and it was just constant. He said, look, you're going to be in a wheelchair in your mid-30s if you keep going, so...
Hello and welcome to the Jeff Stelling Show with OLBG. Now, my guest today is always included in lists of Tottenham's top 10 players ever, and he's usually named as their greatest ever defender. He was a one-club man, played more than 300 times for Spurs, could have been many, many more. He probably won't want me to mention this, but of course, injuries reduced the number of games that he played for the club. As a newspaper headline once put it, a king denied his chance to reign. That king is Ledley, who joins us now. Hi, Ledley, how are you doing?
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
We'll probably touch on injuries later on. But Thierry Henry called you the best defender he ever played against and the only one who didn't try to stop him by fouling. And amazingly, in that career, 323 games, I think it was, something
yep,
like
that's
that.
Right.
No red cards. 8 yellows.
Yes.
Yeah. You were the sort of ultimate gentleman of the game.
I don't know. Is that a good thing? I mean, I don't think you want to be called a gentleman as a centre-half. But, Thierry was the best striker that I ever played against. And to hear that from him was an amazing thing, really, because Arsenal was such a great team during that period of time. It was a real tough challenge to play against them and him. So for him to say that was great. But... you know, that was just the kind of player that I wanted to be, a player that tried to win the ball cleanly, fairly. If someone got past me, which I hated, I had to find a way to improve. It wasn't to foul them, it was to improve myself. And that was the way I was.
Yeah. I love the way you said Arsenal were a great team. Well, we'll touch on the current Arsenal a bit later on. Yeah. Did you ever come close to getting a red card?
Never, no.
No?
No. And it's funny because whenever I got a yellow card, all of a sudden, I felt like I was going to get a red card, which it never happened. But I was so not used to playing with a yellow card that once I got a yellow card, I was walking a tightrope all of a sudden and it felt really different. But as I say, it's just the type of player I was. I tried to stay on my feet as much as possible, not go to ground. And when you do that, you have a better chance.
It's an astonishing record and I'm sure one that will never, ever be beaten, you know. Especially in this day and age, where tackling is sort of outlawed, isn't it, in many respects?
Yeah, exactly. Now it's going to be difficult for anyone to play over 300 games and pick up
only
8 yellow cards. Yeah.
And as we said, over 300 games for the same club, and here we are in Tottenham resplendent kit. Was Tottenham always the club for you?
From a very early age, yeah. I mean, going back, I played in a grassroots team where 5 of us, age 8 or 9 years old, 5 of us went on to play in the Premier League.
Whoa!
5 of us. Which
who
was incredible.
Were the 5?
So the 5 was myself, Paul Konchesky, Bobby Zamora, J-Lod Samuel, and John Terry.
Amazing.
So we all played in the same team. First club we went to was Leyton Orient. That was a local club to us that took all our players. And then slowly everyone kind of left and went to different clubs. And I joined Tottenham with 2 of my good friends at the time. And... yeah, from the moment I had my first training session, I knew that it was the place for me. You know, the coaches gave me a lot of confidence and I felt like I could be the type of player that I wanted to be, you know, a ball playing centre back, a player that wanted to express itself. And I felt the coaches gave me that opportunity. So from day one, I felt like it was the right place and I was going to stay there for a long, long time.
Which
I didn't think
did.
30 years. I've been there 30 years now. So,
Were you ever tempted? Was there ever the opportunity to leave that you thought maybe, just maybe?
There was kind of interest, but I was never interested myself. You know, I was captain at the age of 23. And from that point on, I felt like it was my club to try and lead. And, you know, I wasn't one to jump ship. You know, I was jealous of the Man United's winning, the Chelsea's winning, the occasional Arsenal winning. But... my job, I felt, was to make our team into winners, to try and improve our team. And unfortunately, injuries along the way kind of got in the way of that. But that was always my ambition, to take my team to be winners.
a baptism of fire, wasn't it? I mean, your debut at Anfield.
Yep.
Wow, doesn't come much tougher than that.
It doesn't. It doesn't. And funny enough, I've spoke to a lot of the ex-players that I'm around, and a lot of them made their debut at Anfield. And I don't think any of us won in our first games. So obviously a really tough place to go. Yeah, I was 18 at the time and I was on the bench with 2-0 up. And in the 44th minute, it was Maurizio Tirico got sent off.
Well, so, there's a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. So so George Graham's says to me at halftime, you're coming on. So, you know, that's probably the worst thing that you can have, that 15 minutes to get nervous. It's better just to come on the pitch straight away. So, yeah, 15 minutes of kind of preparing myself, speaking to myself in the toilets, in the mirror. And then I come on and we lose 3-2. So, yeah, I come on at left back. I think it was the only time I ever played left back. But, yeah, it was a tough, tough first game.
Yeah, a test of character.
It was, yeah. And these things are great, you know, because, you know, throughout your career, you're going to have so many ups and downs. And I always think that, you know, you always try to take the positives out of your downs and try to find strength within that. And I think that will improve you as a person, improve you as a player.
Yeah. You mentioned George Graham, obviously, one of your managers. In your time at Tottenham, inevitably you would have a few. Glenn Hoddle, Jacques Santini, Martin Jol, Wandin Ramos.
Sometimes I forget about Santini when I'm naming him. Yeah, because I think he's only there for maybe about 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
Ramos and then Harry Redknapp at the end.
And then Harry. Yeah. Who understood you best, or did they all understand you?
I had a good relationship with all my managers. They played different kind of roles in my career. Obviously, George Graham put his trust in me as a young kid. He was great because he was all about defending and defenders. So that helped me at a young age. And then Glenn comes in and he's totally the opposite. You know, he wants his players to express themselves. The formation changed. I love playing under Glenn. I was able to come out with the ball. You know, sometimes I'd find myself in the left wing as a centre-half. And it was free-flowing football and I enjoyed that. Really enjoyed my time under Glenn. Then Martin Jol. By now I'm a little bit older, 23, and I become the captain of the club. And I felt like Martin was the manager that took us to a team that kind of started banging on the door of top four. Obviously, we had the old Pizzagate during that period of time. But we had a group of young players at the time, Aaron Lennon's, the Tom Huddleston's, the Defoe's, Robbie Keane's, Michael Dawson's, you know, and I felt that we was able to start building something. So I really enjoyed that under Martin. And then, of course, you know, we had the Santinis, Ramos, where we won something under. But then to finish off with Harry was great for me, you know. Yeah. By then, I'm not training. So for him to allow me to still continue my career, not training, I'm lucky to have had Harry. But we had a great team under Harry.
Yeah.
Fantastic team.
We had some fantastic players. Harry said, even if he only plays 20 games a season, he's worth having because he is so good. We always have a better chance of winning. And it's great to have somebody who's got that real understanding, that empathy for the issues that you're going through.
Yeah, well to be honest, I think, you know, the main thing is if I'm playing, we have to win. You know, if I'm on the pitch and we're losing, then that's going to go out the window. So I had to make sure during my period of not training, I made a difference on the pitch. And that was not so much through myself, but it was through making sure everyone around me was better. And I managed to do that during my kind of my time. And going back to Harry, you know, how kind of important he found me to the team. I remember being out with a groin problem, maybe 7 months in the end I was out. I trained once and I went to watch us play at Anfield. And an hour and a half before kickoff, Harry said, can you play? I said, what? He said, we're a better team when you play. So I end up playing.
No.
We win 2-0 against Suarez.
I was going to say, I was about to ask whether he was joking or not.
Yeah, no, it was. So I ended up playing. But I was able to make a difference just being on the pitch. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, when you're a young player and you're playing reserves with older players and they make your game a lot easier for you. You know, you're 16 or so and you're playing with an experienced player who's talking to you, helping you through the game, and it makes your game a lot easier. That's kind of how I felt that I kind of affected the team. You know, just being there. Not so much myself having a fantastic game, but making sure everyone else did.
Yeah, we'll come on to England in a moment or two, but from a club point of view, was that 2008 League Cup final the biggest day?
Yeah, because I played in a cup final under Glenn very early in my career. And we were favourites to win that game. We lost to Blackburn. And I made a mistake, really, that cost the winning goal. So that was tough lesson. The next opportunity comes along. It's 2008. You know, you expected it to come along a lot quicker, but 2008 is the next opportunity. By now, I'm captain.
Nice picture.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Robbie Keane at the forefront. Robbie. You had a good team. Decent team, didn't you?
Very good team. Berbatov, obviously. What a player.
What a player.
Yeah, but myself and Jonathan Woodgate, it was our first time we ever played together in the cup final. He joined in January. I'd been out between the semi-final, which we beat Arsenal 5-1 in, and the final. So I missed maybe a month or so. In that time, we signed Jonathan Woodgate, and we paired together for the final, first time ever, and just clicked. But yeah, best moment of my career, of course, to lift the trophy. We see how difficult it is at Tottenham. Players like Harry Kane, Hugo Lloris, that didn't manage it during their great period of time. So yeah, to have had the opportunity is fantastic.
And it's worth pointing out as well that the Chelsea side that you beat that day, up front for them, Didier Drogba and Nicolas Anelka.
Yeah, had Essien, obviously Lampard, Terry. It was a tough team. And as I mentioned before, you know, beating Arsenal 5-1, you know, you're immediately on a high. And then you realise, okay, we've still got the final left, and it's a Chelsea team, who were a tough team to beat. But we made a pact to each other after the semi-final that we wasn't going to let this go to waste. We're going to make sure that we win the final now, and we did. Yeah.
How did he fare against Drogba?
Yeah, enjoyed playing against him. Very physical. You know, could score goals from outside the box, score with his head. One of the best players, for sure, in the Premier League that I played against. But I enjoyed my battles with him. Really enjoyed it. There was good physical battles. I'm sure. But Drogba did, I think he did manage quite a few goals against Tottenham. Not always when I was playing, but his record against Tottenham is very good.
I'm glad you added not always when you were playing.
Yeah, but no, I just remember him having quite a good record against us. So, but he was a top player.
And you were back the next year, and for somebody who has as many injury issues as you, you know, you played Manchester United in the next year's League Cup final, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
120 minutes, nil-nil, and you played all 120 minutes.
Well, you know, even the Chelsea final, as I mentioned, I didn't play between the semi-final and the final.
Yeah.
But I knew we were going to have to do it the hard way, because it's Tottenham. So I knew the game was going to go to extra time. I knew that it was the last thing I wanted, but I knew it would go that way. And then, of course, the next year as well goes to extra time. Funny enough, I remember being on the pitch and Michael Dawson is playing next to me. He's gone down with cramp. And I'm the one who don't train. And he was down, you know, with cramp. We obviously we got to the final that year and lost on penalties, which was a shame. But, great moments.
Yeah. Tell us about Dawes.
Yeah, great lad.
Yeah.
Yeah, you obviously know him well.
Yeah, I know him well. He's very grounded, isn't he?
He's so loud. Yeah. You know, whenever Dawson's in the room, everyone knows. But what a lad. You know, he joined the club at a young age, and you know, I suppose I kind of took him under my wing in terms of you know, how we played the game and trying to improve him as a defender. But we was good because we were opposites. Dawson was very front footed, very aggressive, great in the air, and I was more of a kind of reader. So I think we complemented each other well, and I always say that, you know, we played the most games together, so he's my favourite partner.
Brilliant. Will there be some offended by that if he was your favourite? But I hope Jonathan Woodgate's not listening.
Well, myself, and, do you know what? Myself and Woodgate would have been really, really good. But I would say one of us was both injured.
Yeah.
You know, we were always injured. So we only played probably five games together.
Yeah.
Myself and
only five.
Yeah,
wow.
But not many games together.
Yeah. He was a good footballer as well.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Very good. But yeah, with my knee and his hips and back and everything, it didn't really work.
Look, just before we get back into it, we've got a prize that is absolutely tailor-made for any Spurs fan watching this. Over at OLBG Prizes, we're giving you the chance to win a signed Ledley King retro Tottenham shirt. It's completely free to enter. A beautiful purple pony number from the 90s, hand-signed by the man himself. One of the most iconic Spurs shirts ever made. And signed, of course, by a club legend. Definitely one for your wall if you win it. Just head to olbgprizes.com/Stelling. Get your free entry in and you could be the one who's taking it home. That's olbgprizes.com/Stelling. Best of luck to you. And of course, 18 plus only. T and C's apply. You brought up the injuries before I did, Ledley, we'll get stuck into them just for a moment. How tough was it when you were, well, not only were you not playing, but you weren't training with the guys as well?
Yeah, tough.
It's like being in solitary confinement.
It was. And I would say, looking back now, I was probably slightly depressed because, you know, as a footballer, all you want to do is actually play football, train, you know, have a laugh with the lads. You want to be in the trenches, you know, through the tough times out there. You know, even when it was snowing and the lads would go out, I felt guilty. You know, I'm going into the gym, they're going out, you know, when it's snowing and stuff like that. So it was difficult. It was difficult. I am
mentally tough.
Mentally, yeah. Very mentally. Yeah, very. And that's the main thing. It was.
What did you do when they were off training then?
My biggest problems was muscle injuries. So I'd play 3 or 4 games and I'd break down with a groin. Come back 3 or 4 games, hamstring. Come back, and it was just constant. So I was always just trying to keep my muscles strong. I didn't really do any cardio. I used the swimming pool quite a bit, but not so much swimming, more a bit of splashing. and just getting movements in the swimming pool. It was just it was an ongoing thing for 5 years. It was just tough every day. You know, you come in and you know you're doing something that you don't particularly enjoy, but you have to do it to keep your career going. So yeah, it was difficult.
When it came to sort of match days, I mean, I guess, you know, you didn't know whether you were going to last 9 seconds or 9 minutes or 90 minutes.
No, once I was in a game, I very rarely come off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, my biggest thing was kind of getting to the game because my knee would just blow up after a game. So it was about trying to get the swelling down to a point where I could actually bend my knee and kind of participate in the game. But once I'd declared that I was playing the game, that was it. I'd normally finish the game.
So was it always...
But it was the muscle injuries that were the ones that would... So it was the muscle injuries rather than my knee. Once I was on the pitch, the knee was never an issue.
Yeah.
It was the muscles. And yeah, that, once that gets in your head as well, that's tough.
Yeah. As far as the knee was concerned then, could you play Saturday, Wednesday, or did it need the full week?
It normally needed the full week, yeah. I did do it a few times. But generally, it needed a week to recover.
I read a story to say, you know, that you couldn't even play football in your garden with your son.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most enjoyable when you're kind of in pain. You know, I still kind of do. I do have a little knock around, but now it's the hips more than anything. You know, obviously the knee affects different parts of the body, and it all takes its toll. But yeah, it's not too bad. Funny enough, my knee's hardly ever been swollen since I stopped playing. I spent my whole time with it swollen when I was playing. So, you know, sometimes I do think, can I come back? But days are done.
Do you ever think you retired? You were 31?
31,
were you?
Yeah.
Did you ever think you stopped too soon?
No. Because my last season, I started the season very well. The first 10 games or 12 games I played in, we hadn't lost a game. And I was feeling so good that I was training the day before the game. And I was buzzing around and I was full of energy and beans, feeling good. And I collided with a goalkeeper. And my knee blew up. I ended up being out about a month. And I remember, I think we were top, or Man City were top, or we were second. So a game come up and I wanted to play. It was a huge game at the time. So we ended up taking fluid out of my knee, taking lots of the swelling out, sucking it out, and I come back and played. And we were 2-0 down, we got back to 2-2, and I gave away a penalty in the last minute, Balotelli. That was the beginning of the end for me, because the next 10 games or so I played, just couldn't move the same way. And that was kind of the first time in my head where I thought about retirement, because I couldn't move, wasn't enjoying it. And after speaking to my surgeon at the end of the season, he said, look, you're going to be in a wheelchair in your mid-30s if you keep going. So I had to take that advice. And, you know, by the way it felt, I knew it was time.
Yeah. Does the future concern you at all, having had so many injuries affecting so many different parts of your body?
No, not really. I think, now it's just about trying to just maintain it, trying to keep myself healthy, you know, ticking over in the gym, doing bits and pieces. But, yeah, and day to day, I'm fine.
Yeah. Look, let's talk about happier things. I mean, you've played some great players, you know, at Tottenham. And I did a list of a few, sort of Gareth Bale and Luka Modric. Yeah. You mentioned Dimitar Berbatov, David Ginola, Jamie O'Hara, of course.
Yeah, of course, Jamie.
Sorry, Jamie. Who is the best? Who is the best you played with?
Ooh. I'd say the two that stood out were probably the two that went to Real Madrid, Modric and Bale. I mean, Modric, when he first came in, we thought he was a number 10 type player. And normally with number 10 type players in England, where you're playing a 4-4-2 most of the time, you stick them out on the left wing. So he started his career a little bit kind of coming off the left. And we thought he was a more advanced player. But once he came into the middle, he was actually someone that liked to play deep, just in front of the back four and get the ball and start kind of ticking from there. And that's when we saw the best of him. Great balance, you know, couldn't get the ball off him. You know, obviously small in stature, but strong legs, great passing range, brilliant, brilliant player.
Did you think he'd still be playing now?
No, I mean, he left Tottenham when I retired. So that's 14 years ago now.
Wow.
And he's still going, unbelievable. And then Gareth, of course, joined the club as a young kid from Southampton. People say, did I see that in him when he first came? No, of course not. You know, but what I did see was a kid that had a wand of a left foot. He could run all day, and I thought he could be maybe the best left back in the world. You know, one day he had the kind of tools to do that. I didn't see him playing so high up the pitch. I don't think he ever saw that. But something just clicked in him. You know, and It was amazing how he just started playing him wherever he wanted to play in the end, because he just caused havoc wherever he played. Obviously, as I say, the one that he had, his running power. I didn't see that with Gareth, but what he's gone on to achieve in his game, in the game, is incredible.
One of the most exciting players that I think I've ever seen. I think he's absolutely wonderful. Yeah. It's interesting talking about all those players. They're all sort of Spurs-type players, if you like. They all had, you know, flair and excitement.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the Berbatovs, the Van der Vaarts, you know, David Ginola. I remember watching him as a kid. You know, we used to come up from the youth team to watch him training, and, you know, see his finishing after training and things like that. He was the wow player at that time. And I think David now, in today's formations, would be an even better player.
Yeah. Talking about good players, you went to South Africa for the World Cup in 2010. That wasn't a bad team, wasn't it? I mean, didn't get the outcome we wanted, but JT was there, and Ashley Cole, and Lamps, and Gerrard, you and Wayne Rooney. Oh, I mean, it was a terrific team. Yeah. But you were picked, and you hadn't been playing, had you?
I had been playing. I mean, I'd finished the season really well. During my career, there was times where England would try and call me up, and I just didn't feel confident enough in my body to play the games. Didn't need any extra games, you know. As I said, I was breaking down with muscle injuries. But just before the World Cup, I went on a really good run of games where, for the first time in a long time, I felt that I could do it. And Capello was the manager at this point, and he asked me if I could come to the World Cup. And people think I'm lying when I say I would never have gone if I didn't believe I could get through the tournament. You know, obviously a World Cup is a big thing to turn down, but I would have turned that down if I wasn't quite sure. You know, I really did believe I was in a good place to go and do it. Played two warm-up games fine, and 5 minutes into the first game, I think it was just after Stevie scored, I felt something in my groin. I couldn't bear to bring myself off the pitch, because I knew there were so many people saying, why did you take him? Why did you take him? So somehow I managed to kind of cheat my way through the half. I wasn't tested in it to a point that was going to kind of take me off the pitch. But I knew at half time I was done. That was the end of my tournament.
Yeah. I mean, despite their best efforts, because I think that Capello recommended a sort of Italian medic to treat you. Now, I read that his methods were such that Gennaro Gattuso, one of the game's real hard men, had been reduced virtually to tears by his treatment. Yeah. So what did he do? How tough was it?
I mean, David Beckham was at AC Milan at the time, and he said about that treatment, And he said, yeah, Gattuso was crying. It was painful. It was tough. But I was trying my hardest not to cry and not to be Gattuso. But it was just some kind of like electro kind of pads on the area. And, you know, it got turned up to a real high frequency. The higher you could take, the better. Basically, I think they just shut down our nerves. Because after a while, I felt good to go. When I should have been out 3 weeks, I was back within a week. But ironically, I had problems the next season with the same groin. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But yeah, that moment in time, it's about getting the player back as soon as possible. Yeah. And I end up sitting on the bench at Germany in the German game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was it kind of done its job for that moment in time.
Yeah. Yeah. And the German game obviously is one we'll never forget.
Yeah.
You know, for the sort of Frank Lampard ghost goal. You're sitting on the bench. What was your view? Could you see how far over the line it was?
Yeah, on the bench, you're thinking it must be a goal. You know, there's nothing you can do, you know, when you're on the bench. But, you know, we felt it was over the line. And obviously seeing the reaction of the players, you know, we knew it was over the line for sure.
Yeah. And it's a shame, as I say, you know, it was a great team. And you look at some of the players, you know, that you're alongside there. Wow. What was it like playing under Capello then? What was he like as a man?
I'd heard a lot about him. As I say, you know, I was kind of a late call up. I'd missed a few years under him, but when I wasn't playing, and I'd hear a lot of stories about how kind of tough he was, the discipline, you know, certain things that he kind of took away from the players, you know. And we wasn't used to that at the time as an England squad. So he came in and changed a lot. And I knew a lot of the players weren't particularly happy with it. For me, he was good. He was fantastic. I went to the England squad and the difficulty was that I don't train, you know. So we had to let him know. Obviously, he knew the situation, but how we was going to kind of set up was going to be really tough, you know, to be away for 3 weeks and not with my teammates who are not familiar with me and my methods was really difficult. It was a really strange situation. So I hardly kind of had any, people probably can't even remember I was there. My teammates probably can't, because on the training pitch every day, I wasn't there. I wasn't training. You know, I was in the swimming pool. I was in the gym. So that was tough. But fair play to Capello. He allowed me to kind of continue what I'd done at my club, to try to get me on the pitch.
Yeah. Did that almost make you feel like, you know, you were on the outside looking in?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, and I think players generally didn't believe that I didn't train. You know, when I met up with the English squad, they didn't believe that I didn't train. Mm. But they got to see it on the trip that, yeah, I didn't.
How many England caps was it?
Just 21 in the end.
It's not bad for somebody who didn't train.
Yeah, it's not bad. It should have been more. Even with my Tottenham caps, you know, whenever they're mentioned, a little part of me is always like, should be more. But at the same time, really happy and proud that I was able to still continue through my problems and get the best out of myself, even during the difficult times.
Look, before we get back to the conversation, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've got some terrific guests coming up. Plenty of stories from right across the game and, of course, a few strong opinions as well. So if you're watching on YouTube, just hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, tap the bell icon just so we can let you know when the next episode is coming along. Thanks, as always, for being with us for the Jeff Stelling Show with OLBJ. Let's talk current day Spurs, Ledley, shall we? I know you're still involved with the club, very much involved with the club. What have you made of Roberto De Zerbi, first of all?
I think he's been fantastic. I think he's come in and made a huge difference. Obviously, coming in tough circumstances, a lot of pressure on at that point. And I think what he done was he come in and he didn't try to change anything drastically. Just a few simple methods, a few simple principles, but mainly it was about players playing with their heart, and I think he managed to get that out of them. I think the fans were right behind him, and I think we finished the season. I think most fans finished the season looking forward to the next one, because I think it's going to be totally different, and I think we're going to be a really good side.
We'll come on to that in a moment. But why has Spurs been such a tough club to manage? I mean, you mentioned some of the managers you played under, some great guys, you know, in there, Martin Yarl and Harry Redknapp and so on and so forth. But, you know, Tottenham have been through Pochettino and Conte and Jose Mourinho and obviously Ange Postecoglou, Thomas Frank. What makes it so difficult to manage?
I have no idea. I've not managed them, but... I don't know if it's the expectation. Obviously, you know, to a certain degree, recruitment is vital, and it's important to put together a team capable of achieving things. But you look at the team under Poch during that era, and you feel, you know, that's a team that probably should have won trophies. I don't know what it is. It's difficult. It's difficult to put your finger on, and of course, there's the money element comes into play. You know, how much you're spending. Players, obviously, the best players are on the biggest wages.
But you mentioned recruitment, and I was looking at, over the past 5 years, only Chelsea have had a bigger net spend than Tottenham, and Arsenal's pretty close. But teams like Villa. I mean, Tottenham's net spend is 9 times bigger than Villa's, or 12 times bigger than Brighton's. So, and I know it's difficult for you because you're involved in the club, but some of the recruitment hasn't been very clever.
Yeah, you could say that. And I think that it's always difficult when you're looking at players. You don't know who's going to hit the ground running in the Premier League. You know, someone can look fantastic playing in one league, in a different team, and they come to your place and... it just doesn't work out. You know, people, I've been asked before, who's the worst player you played with? And I always say there's no bad players. Like you can't be a bad player playing in the Premier League. There's players that it didn't work out for them at that club. And I think we probably had too many of them who have not kind of reached the levels expected.
Yeah. I mean, look, Roberto De Zerbi's made it pretty clear where his emphasis is with the signings so far, you know, with Van Hecker and Senesi, Andy Robertson, Martin Dubravka, you know, defensive signings. What do you make of them?
Yeah, well, it looks like he's starting from the back and he's trying to kind of build a foundation, which is important, but they're good signings, very good signings. It's clear that he wants to play from the back, he wants to play through the lines of the team, and he's brought in defenders that are very good at that. And I always think in today's football, when you have defenders that can start the attacks from the back, it's going to make a huge difference to your team. Yeah. You know, that's where the game starts. You know, at the back, goal kicks, play to centre halves. Okay, now what can you do? Yeah. And the players that are really good on the ball or can really play that pass behind other teams' midfields and bring other people into play, it changes the whole picture of the game. And I think the manager realises that, and he's brought in players that are capable of it.
Yeah. Well, Van Hecker was brilliant at doing just that at Brighton, wasn't he? He revels in that sort of position.
The players that we had, that in their own way, were good. I mean, Romero, he's capable of finding that pass. And Van der Ven's more of a player that can run past a player. You know, when an attacker tries to press him, he'll step past him and open the game up that way. So we do have players that are capable of that. Probably didn't play together enough as a partnership, and that was a problem.
I mean, I am scratching my head a little bit because, you know, Van Hecker, Senesi, Christian Romero, Mickey van der Ven, you've got a few central defenders there.
That's four top centre-halves.
Yeah. You can't keep all four of them, can you?
Listen, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Listen, if you can keep all four, then, you know, fantastic. But it's going to be difficult, yeah.
I mean, where are the other priorities, do you think, in terms of strengthening? What would you like to see strengthened before the start of the new season?
I think we've got quite a young midfield. So I think someone like a Paulinho was really important last season because of his experience in the team. Same as Bentancur. Bentancur came back in at the end of the season, and I thought he was fantastic. Made a huge difference because of that experience. You know, so it's tough to put that on the young players. You know, the Archie Greys, the Bergvalls, the Sars. So we're probably going to need a bit more in the midfield in terms of experience. And I think up front as well, centre forward, Solanke and Richarlison missed a lot of games between them. And I think we're going to have to look at something there as well. I think that would be important for us.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, Solanke missed a lot of games, but just look, you know, every club has injury problems, but yeah. Maddison, Kulusevski, Kudus, Xavi Simons, you know, if they're all fit next season, along with Dominic Solanke, I mean, it'll be like a whole new team.
Yeah, yeah. You look at the players you mentioned, they're all creative players, you know, and that's what the team was missing this season, the players that can make a difference, that can, you know, some of the goals that Xavi scored, you know, Maddison, he can score from outside the box. He can find a pass. We know that Kudus can beat a man and make something happen. This is going to make a huge difference to the team. So it's going to be exciting to get them back. Even, you know, young players like Odegaard and Tell, who, and Odegaard missed the second half of the season, more or less. But he's a good young player and he's going to come back in. And Tell's going to have gained a lot of experience from this season. I think he's someone the manager likes as well. So there are plenty of options there. So it's a good time for Spurs fans, I feel.
It's nice to go into the season optimistically, isn't it? but you probably went into the last season optimistically as well. Look, 17th, two seasons in a row. As a man who loves the club, how worried were you, particularly last season, when it's gone right down to the final game?
Very worried. I remember being at a Forest game. And, I mean, the fans couldn't have done any more. You know, it was tens of thousands in the streets, cheering the team into the stadium. You're playing against a team that were below us at that time. And to get beat 3-0 at home, that was worrying. That was worrying. And a lot of the ex-players were concerned. You know, a lot of us had chats between us. You know, we're talking about Ozzy, Glenn, Gary Mabert, then some of the younger lot, Dawson's, the Robbie Keane's, the Defoe's. We're all kind of thinking, is there anything we can do? Is there any way that we can come together? Because we didn't feel it was anything particularly tactical at this point, what the team needed, but they needed to feel the spirit, and they needed to know how much it means to play for the football club. And we were concerned at that point. So there was a lot of kind of chats behind the scene, just trying to figure out how we can help, or if we can help. But luckily we got in a top, top manager, and he was able to do it for us.
Yeah. Did it make it even worse, you know, that your arch rivals from across North London winning the league?
Well, I think in the end, the way it's worked out is we were so busy worrying about ourselves, just staying up. Kind of, it almost felt like we forgot Arsenal won the league, because we got what we needed out of the season. It was a big sigh of relief just to stay up. And as I've said, I think the feeling at the end of the season was one that under this manager, I think we're going to be all right. I think we're going to do well next season. So that was kind of the genuine feeling. You know, of course, Arsenal winning the league was not ideal for us, but our main priority was staying up. We had to kind of look after ourselves. We had to take one for the team by doing that. Yeah. So it's fine.
Do you see any comparisons between De Zerbi and Arteta? I mean, they're both passionate guys for a start.
Yeah, passion-wise, for sure. But I like the passion from the managers. I like that. You know, I think as a player, when you see your managers kind of giving everything and you see how much it means to him, I think that translates to the pitch. And yeah, I'm sure De Zerbi's going to have some moments this season full of passion. But I think it unites everyone, the team, the fans. It makes you feel in it together, and everyone's kind of feeling that emotion of really wanting to win.
It's probably hard for a Tottenham man, but do you have to aspire to be more like Arsenal?
In what way?
Well, in results ways.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we would love to win the league. Maybe in terms of getting the right man in and allowing him to build something. I think Arteta was given that time. You know, they believed they had the right man and they gave him time to get in the players that he wanted, to get the ones that he didn't want out. And I think we're kind of going through that process now. So, you know, however many years behind we are, but I think the process starts now, which is good.
Mm. Do you think there's an element at all that somebody at the club has taken their eye off the ball, in the sense that maybe Tottenham need to focus on football more? They've got a magnificent stadium. If you look at the websites, you see what's on, and you'll see the, you know, the Bad Bunny is on, and BTS is on, and NFL's coming up. So we've got to look a bit further down for the football. Is there maybe not quite enough focus on football?
I don't know. I think when I look at the job that Daniel done, you know, he's taken the club to a whole new level. Obviously, if I mention the training ground and the stadium, but also a team that has been to a Champions League final, that kind of fairly consistently reaches the Champions League. And we've said that we have spent money, but it's whether it's worked out for us. That's the question, you know, the money that we have spent. So, you know, had probably different players or different signings probably worked out differently, then there'd be a different kind of question. But, you know, we have spent money. We have spent, yeah.
I mean, look, the fans love to blame Daniel Levy, didn't they, for when things went wrong. And I remember when he left the club, he said, you know, in years to come, now that I'm gone, people will realise what I did and will actually miss me. Do you think there's an element of that?
I think it's going to take, you know, it's going to be over a period of time, of course. You know, people are going to appreciate what Daniel's done. Obviously, now at the moment, they're just focused on kind of making the changes needed for the club to be back where it belongs. But yeah, once the dust has settled, you know, Daniel was in the job a long time and, done, as I said, done a really, really good job. But, you know, things change, people move on, and it's kind of a new era for the club.
Yeah. What's acceptable this season for Tottenham fans, do you think? Obviously not 17th again.
16th. No. I think we'll be a top six side. And almost, it wouldn't surprise me if we was in the top four. I think it's difficult now. We know there's some very good teams. There's a slight uncertainty about Liverpool with a new manager. Chelsea, we don't know who they are this season yet. I think Man City, obviously, you know, Pep leaving is gonna take some time. So that's where I think, you know, although we've got a new manager, I think we're in a place now where we're about to kind of really improve the squad. And, you know, I think top six would be something achievable for us. I do believe that.
Yeah. I think you've only made the top four once in seven seasons, but this is probably a window of opportunity in a lot of senses.
Yeah,
isn't
you just
it?
Every season's different. You just don't know how it's going to play out. You know, I always say, as a player, I start the season to try and win it, and whatever happens, happens. But your focus is on trying to win every single game, and you don't know how the other teams are going to perform. So, you know, you just got to do your job and see where you lie at the end.
Let's take a less than ideal scenario. If Spurs finish 10th, 11th, 12th, would you still urge them to stick with the manager, having been through three last season?
Yeah. Obviously, listen, I can't speak on behalf of the football club, and you don't know what happens or what the reasons are. But, yeah, I believe we need... one thing that disappoints me is managers have no time these days. You know, I'm seeing so many managers lose their job in 3 or 4 months. You know, it takes time to build. And I hope that we the manager gets time. Because I do believe he's a top manager. And, you know, over a period of time, I believe he will win something with the football club.
I don't think even the most optimistic Tottenham fan would expect them to finish above Arsenal next season. But it would be satisfying for them, wouldn't it, if they could at least close the gap a bit?
Yeah, yeah. I think the most important thing is for us to focus on ourselves and realise...
You know, Tottenham fans, they won't. They won't. They'll focus on Arsenal as well.
We've got to realise that we're on our own journey at the moment. You know, Arsenal are kind of where we want to get to. And I think for us, little by little, we just need to kind of close that gap and keep edging. And it's going to take a period of time. And we have to accept that. You know, there's going to be no quick fix in terms of us winning a Premier League. You know, you don't finish 17th twice in a row and then win the Premier League the next season. But can we, you know, can we finish in the top six the next season? Can we improve on that? And then who knows what we can do this season after that. So it's going to take time and we just have to accept that.
Yeah. What about you, Ledley? What's your future hold then? If you've still got ambitions to coach?
It's always in the back of my head. Obviously, I had a season coaching with... When Jose came to the football club,
yeah.
I bumped into him on the corridors and he said, "What are you doing?" I explained to him and he said, "I want you on the training pitch." So it was a COVID season. The season stopped. And then once the team come back, they finished the season off. I didn't come back because I wasn't a coach at the time. And at the end of that season, he called me and said, "I want you to be on my staff next season." So I couldn't turn him down. It was one of them. And it was fantastic to have an opportunity to work with Jose, to get to know him. It was a shame that it was COVID season because he's someone who thrives off the fans, the engagement. It was a tough season, but at the beginning of the season, I thought we was going to win the league. You know, in December, we were at the top, and I'm thinking, we're going to win the league. I was whispering it to myself, we're going to win, you know. But it didn't quite happen. But Jose was, he was a fantastic person. He was genuinely disappointed that it didn't work out for him. You know, he's a winner. He wants to win everywhere he goes. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But yeah, for me, it was a great experience to have that opportunity to work with one of the best.
Mm. When you say you've still got that thought in your head about coaching, here's a hypothetical question, which is probably impossible to answer. But if a coaching opportunity came up somewhere other than Tottenham, is that something you'd consider? I mean, Spurs fans would understand it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I'm going to go down the coaching route, then eventually I'm going to end up somewhere else. You know, I could start potentially, for example, with the academy. But then something can pop up in a year, 2 years down the line, this abroad or another football club. And as a coach, you know, you're kind of on your own now. You know, you have to kind of make them decisions. So, you know, the aim would be to come back to Tottenham at the top one day if I was to do that. But yeah, I would have to kind of spread my wings if that was the case.
Yeah. Well, you've got so much experience. You've been through so many sort of life lessons, if you like, through your injuries, and you were such a brilliant footballer that it would be such a waste to the game, mate, if you don't. Not that I want to put ideas in your head.
No, do you know what? It's, and I love the game. I love football and I love the thought of the puzzle of trying to work out, you know, how to get the best out of your team. You know, how to bring a team together. I love the kind of sound of it. But then I remember being on the training pitch every single day, how difficult it is, how you kind of lose your life to it. And I always say you've got to be obsessed to be a manager and a coach. And I don't feel obsessed at the moment, and that's the problem. So unless I get that feeling, I won't do it because you can't do it by halves. So, you know, but I still never say never.
Ledley, whatever you choose to do, the very best of luck to you, mate. Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
You've been watching the Jeff Stelling Show with OLBG. Try and join us again next time.